Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
An Erio's original.
Before we get started, I just want to ask everyone out there to pause, park your car, stop doing the dishes. The last piece of laundry can wait, okay? Grab your phone and go and give us a 5-star review. Rate, review, subscribe. It's really important, helps us keep this podcast going, and we're so grateful for all of our listeners and the great feedback that we've been getting. Here's a recent 5-star review from our listener Lola Doodler, Alarmist for the win. It's alarming how much I love the Alarmist. The funny, witty style not only charms but delights the listener, and a Google search of the best podcast led me to this little gem, and I've been an avid listener since. Well done. Well, thank you so much, Lola Doodler, for listening to us and spreading the word. And everyone out there, let us know what you think. We're so grateful.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we discuss history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. In this week's episode, we'll be discussing the Bonnie and Clyde murder spree. Now, Bonnie and Clyde, what a beautiful love story. Isn't that right, guys? I mean, it's a great Halloween couple's costume. It's been glorified in Hollywood, but I actually took this week to really learn about the couple, and I found out it's a lot darker than you guys might think. Luckily, our guest today is not an expert, but her mom is. So I prepared by reading her book, and it's a wonderful book called Bonnie and Clyde, The Making of a Legend by Karen Blumenthal. And I feel like it's time that we dig in and we talk Bonnie and Clyde. Let's get started. Bonnie Parker, born October 1st, 1910, and Clyde Barrow, born March 24th, 1909 or 1910, were an American criminal couple who traveled the central United States with their gang during the Great Depression. They were known for their bank robberies, although they preferred to rob small stores or rural gas stations. Their exploits captured the attention of the American press and its readership during what is occasionally referred to as the Public Enemy Era, between 1931 and 1934. They are believed to have killed at least 9 police officers and 4 civilians. On May 23, 1934, police officers from Louisiana and Texas hid in the bushes along a dirt road near Gibbsland, Louisiana. Around 9 in the morning, Bonnie and Clyde drove up in their tan Ford. They slowed down when they came across fellow gang member Henry Methvin's father, Ivy, who was standing beside his truck as if it was broken. It was a trap. Ivy ducked away and the officers opened fire. Bonnie and Clyde were killed instantly, ending one of the most colorful and spectacular manhunts the nation has seen up to that time. Fun facts, aka death stats. Bonnie was just under 5 feet tall and barely weighed 100 pounds, and Clyde stood not that tall at 5'6 and weighed around 130 pounds. The two were a fashionable and dapper pair. Clyde often wore a tie and Bonnie a bolo shirt and a long skirt. Barrow was first arrested at the age of 17 in late 1926 after running when police confronted him over a rental car that he had failed to return on time. His second arrest was with his brother Buck soon after for possession of stolen turkeys. In March 1930, just 2 months after meeting Bonnie, Clyde was sent to jail for burglaries and car theft. A week later, he and two inmates escaped. They spent a week on the loose, but were eventually caught. It's believed that the gun that was used in the jailbreak was smuggled in by Bonnie. Clyde committed his first murder while in jail at Eastham's camp. An inmate by the name of Ed Crowder had singled out Clyde, beat him, and sexually assaulted him. In October of 1931, Clyde and another inmate, Aubrey Scaly, lured Crowder into a bathroom, beat him with a pipe, and stabbed him. Since he was already serving 15 years, Scaly took the blame, but Clyde was the one who actually did the killing. Bonnie wrote poetry. Her poems, The Story of Bonnie and Clyde and The Story of Suicide Sal, were written in the middle of their crime spree, while she and Clyde were on the run from the law. The Story of Bonnie and Clyde was the last one she wrote, and it's believed that Bonnie gave a copy of the poem to her mother just weeks before the couple was gunned down. And that's a little backstory on Bonnie and Clyde. Now, today we have a friend of mine who is joining us to really get down to the bottom of who's to blame for this crazy spree. It's Jennifer Pam McCartney.
Wow, my full legal name.
Welcome, Jen.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
We're so excited to have you because you are so close to an expert.
It's so true. My mom writes nonfiction books for young adults. I do not. I'm a comedy writer. And she wrote a book on Bonnie and Clyde.
And a great book, I must say. I really recommend it to all of our listeners if you want to, you know, get the full scope of Bonnie and Clyde. It's really written in a way that it's like a soap opera.
Yeah, well, she's a journalist, so she writes very clearly, and technically her books are for young adults, but I enjoy them as an adult because they're, you know, a good length. The font is big.
It is, and they have pictures.
Sidebars. It's just a nice, you know, look her up, buy all her books. It's a good time.
It's really good. Can I just say that I love a good sidebar? Mm-hmm. There's nothing better than a good sidebar. You know, what I really like about the book, too, is she doesn't gloss over the people who were killed.
No.
She really takes the time to give you a little snippet of who these people are. Just because in learning about this tragedy, it's interesting how glorified these two killers are.
Yeah. Well, the fame of the time and then the movie obviously had a huge impact on that, too. You know,
it's yes.
Like sexy Hollywood.
I have not seen the movie. Have you seen the movie?
I have not seen the movie either. Can we just say it's because we're extremely young?
I think it was in the 60s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So haven't seen the movie, but you don't need to see the movie to know that they're legends.
Of course.
Let's, you know, g- get started with who we think is to blame for the spree. And we should clarify that for this tragedy, what we're figuring out is who's to blame for all of the murders.
Right.
Yeah. So the spree kind of happened from when Clyde left jail in 1932. He had already killed his first,
victim?
Victim.
Kill number one in jail.
In jail, which in all fairness, it really did feel like he was just getting by.
Yeah, yeah. Well, should we talk about jail first?
Let's talk about jail. So, I mean, I was thinking we could kind of give a little backstory first on who Clyde and Bonnie were.
They are Dallas kids, just like me.
Oh, that's the other reason. Yeah. That's your other very close connection.
Wow, so close. You know, I too was a sexy lady in a long skirt whose photo went viral.
Did it, Jen?
No.
Okay.
But we are both from Dallas.
You and Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah. It's really, really all we share.
Now, Clyde grew up in West Dallas. Can you tell us a little bit about West Dallas?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was different then, but I think that then their area was very impoverished, right?
Yes.
They grew up in pretty extreme poverty and it was the Depression and, you know, they didn't have a lot of options.
Well, no, they did not. Now, Clyde was the fifth of seven children. His parents were cotton farmers, but didn't have much luck with the crop. So aside from tending their land, they worked on month's end in other farms. So they were often away. And the entire family lived in this cramped three-room shack. But when Clyde was a teen, when he was very, very young, a young teen, he and his two younger siblings moved from rural Texas to Dallas. And that's where they settled in West Dallas. And they actually lived under a bridge as squatters in this, like, squatting village. So mm-hmm. Clyde got his first taste of petty thefts by stealing metal so that he could resell it. So that's how he kind of got started stealing. And he was also a car thief. He was a big fan of the Ford. I believe they were the V8s, Ford V8s. Your mom has an entire section of her book on the Ford V8.
That's where my bookmark is.
Oh my God.
I know, the Ford V8.
So,
like a tomato juice car.
What was crazy to me was that they cost like $800 or something.
Yeah.
And anyway, he was an expert at kind of stealing those cars. And he preferred them because they went fast. They were kind of the first car that would go over 70 miles per hour or something like that. And that meant he could, you know, zoom, zoom, baby.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, zoom, zooming all the way.
Clyde went to jail, as we all know, and he developed this distrust for authority at a young age, even before he had gone to jail. The cops knew him, and they'd always bring him down to the station, and then they beat him to try to confess things, and then they'd drop him off. And it's like, anytime something happened in Dallas, the cops would just show up to his workplace.
Yeah, get old Clyde down here, you know? It's like the kid in school where it's like the principals look at each other and they're like, oh boy, another Clyde incident.
Yeah, so he had a bad rep in West Dallas, poor area. Bonnie Parker, she was the middle child, middle of three. Her father died very suddenly when she was 4 years old, and her mother moved the family to West Dallas to live with their grandparents in this very small farm. And at the age of 15, she fell in love with a classmate named Roy Thornton, and they were married just days before her 16th birthday. This turned out to be a tumultuous relationship. He was a heavy drinker, and he'd disappear for weeks. And in 1929, she left him, and he was later arrested and convicted of burglary. So he wasn't a great guy.
No.
He wasn't.
But how scandalous for her to be like a separated, divorced lady.
Yeah.
You know?
It was very scandalous. And she like was a waitress, like kind of pretty independent at mm-hmm. that time. The thing about her is that they never actually got divorced. So she never divorced Roy. And she continued wearing her wedding ring actually until she died. She was found with the ring on her finger. So this is where they're coming from. It's the Great Depression. They don't call it great. It's not like just the Depression. It's the Great Depression.
We just been to war.
Yes.
Right? Yes. The World stock War market I had crashed.
Bad, bad, bad. Prohibition was...
Oh, yeah. Just lifted, right?
Prohibition. We can ask our fact checker when Prohibition was...
You know, this is very embarrassing because my mom also wrote a book on Prohibition. So the 20s and 30s are really like her specialty.
I think you owe Karen an apology.
I know. I'm so sorry for everything.
This is Maria, by the way, filling in for Amanda. So yes. Just...
We're so happy to have Maria today.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
The period of Prohibition was 1920 to December 5th, 1933.
33. Yeah.
So it's at this point, it's 1929, right?
Right.
She just left Roy. Clyde's trying to get by. He keeps getting picked up by the cops. And then 1930. Is in January of 1930 is when Bonnie and Clyde meet. And she apparently was at her brother's home in West Dallas, and Clyde just came to visit. And the two fell in love.
Wow. Wow. A romance. He drove up in his fast stolen car.
Well, apparently he was a well-dressed guy. He was handsome, although every account, everyone keeps talking about how skinny and small he was.
Maybe that was like the thing then, you know? It was like, yeah, it's a Great Depression. There wasn't a lot of food going around. It was like, yeah, yeah.
I guess if he was chubby, people would be like, what's up with him?
Yeah, yeah. Why is he hoarding all the food?
And also, Bonnie wasn't a tall gal either. She was 5 feet, which is actually my height, although she weighed much less than I did.
Wow, we both have so much in common.
But Bonnie was also a beautiful as well. And she was they were very young at this time. I mean, when they died, I believe he was 23 and she was 24? No, he was older. He was a year older. So they died in May of 34, and she was born October of 1910. So she's
24.
23.
Oh, no, 23. She would have been 24.
Would have been 24. And then he was 24.
Wow.
So he was 24. They're meeting in 1930. So she's 19 and he's 20.
Yeah. Although she did get married at 16.
Yeah.
Which, you know, our standards are a little different now.
But it's just crazy. Like, I think of myself at 23 and 24. And I guess, like, it's like if you had nothing to lose, I guess why not just, like, live on the edge? I mean, it looked like they were on a death, not a trap, but like a...
Yeah, they had a death wish, kind of, right? Like, they didn't have much social mobility, probably. Even though, I mean, they are like white people.
Yes.
So, like, way worse for everyone else in this time. But they were, like, impoverished white people. And
very, very poor.
They, like, weren't gonna, like, move up. And the prison system was really bad.
Really bad. So, let's talk about that prison system.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is a good candidate for something to blame. I don't know how you feel.
I feel very strongly about that, actually. Yeah. It's the first thing on my list. It's the first thing that popped up to me. So a little backstory here. So Clyde went to prison. When he went, the Texas governor, his name is Dan Moody, said, quote, "Prison is not a fit place for human habitation. I have a dog, and I think a lot of that dog, but I'd kill him before I'd put him down there to stay."
Wow.
This is a quote from the governor.
Wow. And to admit that in 1930, I mean, I feel like people would, you know, now obviously prison's still bad.
Yeah.
Lots of problems.
Yes.
But, like, at least we, like, talk about it. I feel like in 1930, I'm surprised that he was so...
open?
Yeah, open and, like, conscious of it.
That's true. I mean, it was clearly overcrowded.
Yeah.
It was clearly filthy, and the inmates were subject to 12 hours of backbreaking work and frequent beatings by the officers.
Yeah. We hadn't had Orange is the New Black yet to open our eyes, teach us about private prisons.
God's doing God's work over there. But yeah, so Clyde was worn down to the point where he was sexually abused by one of the inmates, and he was often beat by, you know, those who were bullying him and the other officers. So it's not like that he trusted that anyone could take care of him. And he was so overworked that he actually cut two of his toes so that he could be sent to the hospital and not have to, which was common back then.
Wow. Wow. I mean, you know that's like is on Bachelor in Paradise when that guy faked being sick so that that girl would fall in love with him.
Oh, my God. And now they're married.
They're married with kids.
Now, guys, side note. Jen is also a huge Bachelor fan. If there's a Bachelor tragedy that you guys, that's well, one that should be done.
Isn't it all a little bit of a tragedy?
Just the Bachelor Just
the
TV.
Franchise. Yeah,
the franchise. I guess it depends on the way you look at it, Jen.
Yeah.
So, yes, and this is you're talking about Carly and
Evan. Wow, a regular Bonnie and Clyde.
So similar to that kind, I guess. Thank you, Jen. Clyde did this as well. And just like a month later or something like that, he was released on parole and pardoned. I'm sorry, because his mom, who we know was a huge supporter of her son, Clyde, to the end, as I guess many moms are, she like petitioned all the way to the governor. For people that had small, very small means, like at one point, I'm pretty sure that they lived under their wagon. This mom, Cumie? C-U-M-I-E?
Yeah, probably. That sounds pretty Texas, yeah, honestly.
Really?
Cumie Barrow.
Cumie Barrow.
Kind of rolls off the tongue.
She went above and beyond,
yeah,
for someone of like such little means. So Clyde gets out of prison. He hobbled for the rest of his life. Yeah. And
the toes?
Because of the toes.
Wow.
Which to me, it was, again, you are someone who really likes the sliding doors.
Oh, I love sliding doors.
he was so frustrated because he felt like he wasn't going to get out of prison and that was his only choice. Now, little did he know that his mom was petitioning to get him out of jail and that the overcrowding was going to get him out on parole because the prisons were so overcrowded. So the cutting of the toe came like in January and then like a week later he was let out.
Wow. That hurts. He could have had all his toes.
So, like, not only did he have this terrible experience, but he also, like, mutilated himself.
Yeah, and he was reminded of it
every
time he walked. Yeah, yeah.
I feel comfortable saying that we should put the Texas prison system up on the board.
Absolutely. I think that's a big one. Because also, he broke out, right, with Bonnie's help, and that's why they were on the run.
That's right. So, when he first got to jail, he broke out, when he first got there. He broke out. She brought a gun.
Right.
And he broke out with his friend Ralph Foltz. Ralph actually was part of the, you know, the Barrow gang. Well, they actually got caught and he went back to jail. So that.
Oh, so. Yeah. Yeah. But he was, you know, it started his life of the run, on the run.
Life on the run. Yes. Yeah.
His on the run tour, if you will.
He got a little taste.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, it kind of strengthened their bond.
Yeah, you could also argue that if, you know, the prison system wasn't so bad, he wouldn't have just, like, kept killing people instead of just, like, serving his time. Or, you know, like,
yeah,
he could have just, like, been stealing from banks, sent to prison, released, reformed, right? But it's like, I'm not going back there. I have to, like, kill all these people than be there.
That's a really good point. His desire to not go back was why he actually killed.
Yeah. Yeah. Prisons are still bad. Really bad in the 30s.
Yeah. I would not have wanted to be in prison. Also, God, I don't know that much about prison, but we don't work 12 hours on a field.
No, they don't anymore. Work 12 hours now, but they do work.
And yeah, like for pennies.
Yeah, prisoners will like be like wildfire firefighters, which is like a, you know, good program for them to get experience. But like, you know, a lot of people are upset that they make less than minimum wage and
right.
all of those things.
Which is
wow,
like,
it's a huge issue. I feel so unqualified to really talk about.
Me too. So we won't like go there per se, sure. But we'll go there.
We're lightly touching on there. We know that it's bad. And
yeah, we have an inkling that it's really, really bad. So after he gets out, he has this like obsession with leading this East Ham prison break.
Mm-hmm.
Because he feels like he wants to go back and like free all these prisoners.
Sure. It's like a give back kind of thing, you know?
He's out. Yeah. He wants to give back to the prison community.
Yeah.
So he's like trying to raise money almost by stealing so that he can go back and do a prison break.
It's kind of like a Robin Hood socialism situation.
Yeah.
You might say.
And at this point, he's only killed Crowder, which is the inmate. So he, you know, it just could have gone differently.
Yeah.
This was a pivotal moment, this prison time and the time after. He was so bitter. And I think his friend, Ralph Fultz, said that prison changed Clyde from a schoolboy to a rattlesnake. Clyde's foot would heal, but he would remain angry and distrustful. This is from a quote from your mom's book. And without much of his two biggest left toes, he would always walk with a limp.
Wow.
So it was just this, like, his bitterness that really stuck with him.
Yeah.
So this prison break, he just becomes obsessed with it. And yeah. He's stealing things. Eventually, they do go back and help with another prison break. But at the time, in 1932... He does not. He is unable to because he gets caught. This is something your mom would really know. I know there's something goes wrong. Like he's in the middle of planning this thing and he realizes he's got to go on the run because at this point he's pardoned.
Right. But he was stealing.
He was stealing
to get by.
So he would
be getting in trouble for that.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay, Jen, I think this is a really good time to give your mom a call and kind of... My question for her is, what was it that made Clyde go from someone who had just gotten out of jail to then someone who went on the run?
All right, I'm going to try her.
Okay, great. This is fun.
I know. She's not going to answer.
We could try her again.
She has an Android. I don't know why that's relevant, but it feels like it is.
Yeah, oh, God, right. This could be... Oh, my God, guys, how will we ever get through this episode? Karen's not taking our call. Okay, well, we'll put a pin on that.
Yeah, we'll come back to it.
And while we wait for your mom to finally take your call, we will talk about his brother, Buck. Mm. Now, what do you think, Jen?
I think... Well, I think that might answer your question a little bit, right? Because, like, weren't they all involved in, like, a murder together that then... led them to have to continue running?
Oh, well, Brother Buck is his older brother. He's the one that he gets caught with the turkeys.
Right.
And Buck takes the fall in that turkey incident and goes to jail for Clyde because Clyde was just a young kid. Buck is 23. This happens in 1926. Buck's 23, Clyde's 17. They're arrested, truck full of stolen turkeys. They were intending to sell it for the holidays. It's right before Christmas. And Buck goes to jail for a week.
There's a lot of in and out of jail going on.
A lot of in and out.
In that family. A lot of crime.
The cops are like...
A lot of distrust of authority.
Yes. The cops are like those Barrows.
Yeah.
I mean, what a bad rep they must have had.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine?
No. I mean, I don't know if there's a similar, I don't know if we can compare it to a similar family
yeah.
of crime at the moment. I'd love to.
The Kushners.
Exactly. You're already on high alert.
Wow. And really, my comparisons are just getting worse and worse.
So Buck, it's in 1933 when he joins the gang. So... Bonnie and Clyde are already on the loose, and they've already kind of... He murders people without Buck. His first murder after the inmate is John Busher. He is the owner of a combination filling station and jewelry store in Hillsboro, Texas, just south of Dallas. Mm-hmm. And Clyde and accomplice Frank Klaus rob him of $40, $2,500 in jewelry, and his gun. And this is the owner where they, like, called out. I believe that they knew his son, and so that's why he, like, comes down and opens the door for them, which is really, really sad. And then they end up killing him because he doesn't just give over the money. Now, a lot of these killings, especially for the civilians, not the cops, mm-hmm. happen because people fought back.
Right.
And we can talk a little bit about that right now.
Well, again... Great Depression, wealth inequality. I think that's a huge maybe thing to blame.
That is true.
You know, people don't have many resources. They can't just, they're not like just a corporation that can willingly give out
yeah.
some money and like still be okay. Like this is like a mom and pop.
No, I know what you're saying. It's like the stakes were high.
Yeah.
For this guy.
Yeah.
And it's not like they had insurance back then where they could be like, I got robbed.
Right.
You know.
Like you like have a security camera and like insurance and, you know, you just file a police report and you're OK. Like,
right.
You know, $40 might have been.
I think it was like
$100.
I mean, the equivalent of hundreds of dollars.
Of course. Yeah.
Back then. The thing about it, though, is that everyone that they did not put up a fuss that they stole, like they would like get out of a car and like jump into another car and like point a gun at someone and like take them hostage and then become friends with them and then eventually like let them go. So this happened a lot. The only people who died were the people who fought back.
Yeah. It's probably how they justified it to themselves too.
Maybe, but what are these people doing? Like did no one ever tell them to like when you get mugged, just give the money.
Did you ever take a self-defense class? Because that's like the number one thing they tell you.
Yeah,
they're like, just give them whatever they want and run away.
I did take, yes. Yeah. Of course I've taken a self-defense class.
Yeah, that's true. My high school required self-defense.
I mean, honestly, every high school should require self-defense.
It really should. It was really useful. I actually think about it all the time, even though I don't think I can do anything they taught me anymore.
Right. The main thing is to, like, go with the, If they're pulling you, go with it and then go run away.
Yeah.
It's like go with the impulse and then take off because they won't see it coming.
Right.
They'll let loose.
Right, right. When they like go into readjust, like run away. It's like my dog likes to try to take toys. This is another bad comparison. My dog likes to take toys on walks, but it's very disruptive to our walking.
Right.
And so you have to like wait until she thinks you're like looking away and is like readjusting it in her mouth to like grab it.
So yeah, so it's the same thing. It's the
all
same
the
concept.
Same. Yeah.
But these people, like, what are you doing? Just let go. Give them the car. There was another guy. His name was Doyle Johnson, 27, killed on Christmas Day because Clyde and WD, who was another member of the gang, tried to steal a car from outside of the house, and he runs out to like stop them from stealing the car. It's like, people, just give them what they want. If there's anything you take away from this episode, if you get mugged, give them your wallet or your car.
Yeah.
It's not worth it.
I think it's also a big takeaway that we seem to be two very easy people to mug despite our self-defense training. So we're like, take whatever you want.
In fact, I'd give them more. I'd be like, you know what? Take the whole purse.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Rebecca, is it safe to say you want to put the victims on the board?
Yeah.
Blame the victims.
Well, at least Doyle Johnson. No, no, no.
I do think... the Great Depression.
Yes.
Let's
put that up on the board.
It's a huge factor.
It's huge.
And poverty. That seems to go hand in hand.
They
but
do.
Like, you know, it might have been more worth giving your life for you had.
And I want to put up on the board his brother, Buck, because as an older brother, he was a very bad influence on Clyde. And I'll tell you why. I think we should put Buck on the board. When things got really, really, really bad, it's when Buck showed up in the picture. He gets out of jail in 1933. And Cumie, is that how you would say it?
I think so. Man, she was just getting all these boys out of jail. What a hard thing to do.
I know. She had 7 kids, too. And I'm pretty sure a lot of them went in and out of jail.
Yeah.
They, you know, they had a hard life. But also, they gave her money, too. So they would steal and give back to the family. So I really do think that Cumie didn't want her sons to be in jail. And I really do think that she was scared that they were going to die. But also she was benefiting from their crimes.
She might have been supporting it in ways we...
Maybe. It's hard to tell. So Buck gets out of jail and he goes with Blanche, his third wife, to Joplin, Missouri. So Joplin, Missouri is a big turning point in Bonnie and Clyde's time. This is where they rent this house and it's got two garages in the middle. And the photos, you can look them up online. They're, you know, they have photos of all of this. And Blanche is there and they're also with WD, this guy WD, who was a member of the gang. His name is WD Jones. And W.D. Jones, like, grew up, their families were friends in West Dallas, and it's a five-person crew. Now, Buck and Blanche are there to visit, and they're supposedly attempting to persuade Clyde to surrender to law enforcement. So Cumie's like, don't go, Buck, don't go, and Buck's like, I gotta go try and get Clyde back, right? Which is like, you could say not really his intention, but it's all, that would be speculation. So the group is running these loud alcohol-fueled card games late into the night in this very quiet neighborhood. And Blanche recalls, here it says, Blanche recalled that they bought a case of beer a day. And this is 1933, which is maybe the end, nearing the end of Prohibition. It's all hours. They're having these parties and everyone's suspicious, right? The Joplin police start getting word that something's up in this area. And so they do this raid, and this is where they kill these two officers, John Wesley Harriman. He was shot during the raid, and Harry McGinnis. And they had already killed a county deputy sheriff during an ambush But this is when, like,
yeah,
it gets real.
Now we're just killing.
Yeah. Now we're killing cops.
Yeah.
And I have to think that has something to do with Buck.
Yeah. He's a bad influence.
And they managed to escape that, although I'm pretty sure that some of them got shot. So they have to tend to wounds and have to rest. So they're no longer healthy, minus cut toes.
Yeah. Can I ask you then?
Yes.
Because this isn't something I thought of before, okay. But, you know, Prohibition is coming to an end. They're drinking a lot. They're getting kind of wild. Mm-hmm. Can we blame Prohibition for, you know, it's the theory that when you ban something, it becomes more like enjoyable.
And, yeah.
And you can be a little more reckless. You know, it can lead to more like recklessness. That they were only, like, maybe part of why they were drinking so much and buying so much beer and being so reckless was that Prohibition had outlawed these things and now it was over or coming to an end.
I think we can. Clyde was not known to drink that much, apparently, but Bonnie was a big drinker and I'm pretty sure the rest of them were big drinkers, probably because they were stressed. I mean, they were on the run.
They had long work weeks. I'm just needed to, like, crack open a beer at the end of the night.
Can you blame them?
Their Calm app wasn't working.
So, yeah, I feel good putting Prohibition. I mean, I think that is part of the societal factors that were contributing to this killing spree.
Because Prohibition also, I mean, it was in a very different area, right? But it also led to, like, all these gangs and all this gang violence.
Yeah.
Which maybe was, like, glamorizing this gang lifestyle for them.
Yes. There were these, like, gangster. It became, like, you know, cool. Sexy.
Yeah. It's like being a tech bro right now. It was like the time sexy. Of everyone wanted to be a gangster.
A tech bro.
Invent an app.
It's like going on Shark Tank right now. Invent an app.
I was trying to think of what it would be like now.
I love these comparisons. These. Yeah.
They're only going to get worse.
Yeah, right, Zuckerberg is. Worse and worse. He's like the Jesse James of the time.
Well, you see one guy's like on the run. You think, I can do that.
Yeah, I can do that too. I mean, I think this idyllic, what would you call it? It's like an idyllic idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of what that would be like.
Well, I don't know if this is the time to talk about it, but one of the things I was thinking about of something to blame is the kind of the fame aspect of it all.
Yes.
Which is part of the gangster thing, but it's, you know, the photo where, like, Bonnie looked like so sexy.
Yeah.
And it kind of went like what we consider to be viral today. And, you know, people were following her. I guess people didn't read the poem until later, but it's still like, you know, it made them, it built them into something.
It sexified them.
Yeah.
Well, that's why Joplin is such a turning point in my mind. You just made me remember that. That's where Blanche, Buck's wife, left a camera.
Oh.
They packed things up so quickly and she left behind her camera. And in the camera were those photos that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And they had just been, like, kind of playing. And the big thing about this photo, which is the most famous, iconic photo of Bonnie, right, where she's got her leg up and she's holding a revolver and she's got a cigar in her mouth, is that she didn't smoke cigars. She was a big cigarette smoker, but she didn't smoke cigars. And she was very upset that the media was portraying her as a cigar smoker.
After the photo went viral, she was
upset. The photo went viral. Yeah, she, like, wrote letters. Like, they never ever really contacted anyone except for, like, when the rumor picked up that she was a cigar smoker.
It was her version of, like, a Notes app apology.
What?
For today. You know how, like, people, they post something on their Instagram and then they have to apologize and they all write an apology in the Notes app and, like, screenshot
yes,
it?
Oh, yes. That, a Notes app apology.
And her Notes app apology. She was like, I don't smoke cigars. I did kill those people, but I don't smoke cigars.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's a really good point. I think that the aspect of, like, fame and celebrity.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's so funny to me And I know this is something, if my mom ever calls me back, we could talk to her about, because I know it was a story of my life. Something that she was really interested in when she wrote this was that, like, it's this idea that, like, we've always kind of, as Americans, or maybe just as people, been, like, obsessed with fame and these, like, nobody celebrities, you know, and obviously now it's like TikTok stars and like Instagram celebrities, but like then it still existed in the 30s.
Yes,
you know?
And I think it's actually very connected to the Great Depression, which is, I read in this Washington Post article, it says, okay, so Bonnie and Clyde exploits took place during the Great Depression when people were beleaguered.
I don't know.
It's not an episode if I don't say multiple, if I don't mispronounce multiple words. Okay. Newspapers themselves, trying to survive, figured out that readers were tired of stories about the miserable economy. According to Jeff Gwynn, the author of Go Down Together, he said that readers wanted diversion, sports heroes, movie stars, and gangsters.
Yeah.
So the media is just kind of like giving the people what they want. Right?
Totally. I mean, that's what happens nowadays, too, all the time.
Yeah. So I think we should put up, what would you say, like the desire for fame?
Yeah, obsession with fame, or like fascination.
Fascination with celebrity.
Or the culture. Yeah, culture of celebrity.
Can
culture
I ask a question?
Yeah.
So if what year was that picture taken, those famous pictures? Like,
when did the Joplin, Missouri
when did the media take note that these were that Bonnie and Clyde were?
Okay, we can get
1933.
And how many murders had they done prior to that?
Okay, so they had already killed Malcolm Davis, who was a sheriff, Don Joyle, who was the guy who ran for his car during Christmas, Howard Hall, who was the butcher, Eugene Moore. Okay, this is the county sheriff who was shot in an outdoor dance because he kind of like surprised them.
And this is all prior to the picture.
This is prior to the picture. John Butcher also, he was the guy at the jewelry store. And we should count Ed Crowder, who was in the jail. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
I'm just going to put this out there, and I for sure 7, 8. Put it on the board. Yeah. But when it comes to who's to blame for the murders, I wonder if it's not so much the media, but the media, if you're asking, like, who's to blame for it becoming glamorized, I'd say the media. Mm-hmm. But if it came down to who's to blame, you know, for the actual murders, I don't think, and it's just me from the outside saying, I don't think it propelled them. It may have gotten them excited, but if they had murdered that many people.
Right.
But I'll put it on the board, but
And I think we should say that, but at the same time, they knew that they were, like, there were these detective novels that came out, like magazines that came out monthly, and they were constantly on them. Mm-hmm. And they did follow those detective novels, because when they would leave behind cars, like in a rush, they always had a detective magazine in
the car.
So
maybe we should say not so much media as like their desire for fame.
Desire for fame. I love it.
Because, you know, the media obviously is a part of that. You couldn't have one without the other. But it's more like it's that kind of like gangster lifestyle we were talking about. Like,
yes.
It's like, you know, why the Kardashians like wanted to become the Kardashians.
Yeah. And they're so close to going on a murder spree.
I mean, we don't know.
We don't know. So I feel good about the stuff we have on the board right now. There's two more things that I want to talk about. And then if you have any others, I really want to talk about those. But just for our listeners, Jen, why don't you tell them what we have on the board?
All right. Here's what we have so far. We have the Texas prison system, the Great Depression, Clyde's brother Buck, Prohibition, parentheses, sexy gangster, and desire for fame.
Okay. Now, I'm going to throw something at you that I don't even know how to pronounce.
Oh, boy.
Okay. It's called hybristophilia.
Oh.
Have you heard of this?
No.
It may be a stretch. It just may be. But according to Women's Health, hybristophilia is one of the countless paraphilias, or abnormal and or extreme sexual desires. Basically, it's a sexual attraction to someone who's committed some sort of outrageous and extraordinary crime. This says Jeffrey Ian Ross, PhD, a doctor, criminologist. Oh, he's a criminologist.
Oh,
and a professor at university. Yes. And a professor. My goodness. Okay. So think like mass murderers, sexual murderers, and cult leaders.
It's basically like the bad boy phenomenon.
Yeah. Well, colloquially, is that how you say it?
Colloquially.
It's also known as the Bonnie and Clyde syndrome.
Oh, my God.
Though it's okay, so you can't really find anywhere any research that says that it's what actually went on between them, but it is known as the Bonnie and Clyde syndrome. So it explains why women who write to men in prison, you know, that kind of thing. Per FBI's telling, Clyde was arrested a few days after they met, but Bonnie helped him escape by smuggling a gun into the Waco jail. She barely knows the guy, has already been married to another guy who was in jail. Now she wants to help Clyde get out of jail. Okay, so she's attracted. It's like a bad boy complex.
Mm-hmm.
Women's Health again says, women who pursue these relationships may also be interested in getting attention from family and friends and the media themselves. So this is just like the just bad guy.
Yeah. Well, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Where like he has to continue to be a bad guy to earn this affection.
Right.
To Mario's point about like what's actually causing the murders.
Right.
You know?
Oh, God, it's a vicious cycle.
Her. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Wow.
I mean, I guess it's more of a disorder, right?
Yeah.
Than a personal like her thing.
It's a little bit her, just maybe her preference.
Her preference.
I mean, I'm sure like a therapist would probably tell her like it was rooted in something.
Maybe her dad dying.
Right, well, her dad died young.
Yeah.
She didn't have a lot of strong male role models in her life.
Do you want me to put daddy issues up on
Bonnie's daddy issues? Oh my God.
Maybe. I mean, it's hard to say.
But there's something there. I mean, yeah. It is speculation. But, you know, we can put it up on the board.
Yeah.
There's something there. Because it happened when she was very, very young. She was very close to her mom. And they always came back. Like, even though they were on the run and it was very dangerous for them to go back to Dallas, they still came back.
Yeah.
Family
and gender roles. You know,
family and gender roles,
like very attached to the family, but also have to maintain these gender roles where like Clyde starts to provide for his mom. And, you know,
I mean, yeah, it's kind of like it is a stretch because we weren't there.
Right.
Right. But I'll tell you what, according to Karen's book, there are a lot of photos of Clyde with his family. He came back very often.
Well, family is everything.
Wow, Jen.
Isn't that the Fast and the Furious movies?
Mom would call.
My mom's calling me. Should I answer?
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Hi, Karen. This is Rebecca, the host of the Alarmist podcast. I read your book and we're doing Bonnie and Clyde this week, and it's been a really great resource for us.
Okay.
We just wanted to know, like, from your perspective, what your opinion, if you knew of anything that happened after Clyde came out of jail that triggered him to kind of go on this crime spree.
Well, first of all, jail made him pretty unpleasant to start with, made him, you know, angry and bitter. But then when he got out of jail, he did try to go to work, and he kept getting arrested again.
Was this because he just had a bad reputation amongst the cops?
Yeah, he had a record.
Oh.
He had a record. If he was poor, you know, he lived in the bad part of town. So if something happened, who do they go after? They go after the ex-con.
Right.
So that's what they did.
Now, in your opinion, do you think that if they had just kind of like let him be, do you think that he would have straightened up a bit?
So that's a great question. It's hard to say for sure, but his family believes he would have. His family believes that if he'd been given the opportunity to go straight, he would have stayed, you know, out of trouble.
Oh, that's really interesting.
But, But whether he actually would have, given his background and given the poverty of the time, that's harder to say.
Right. It maybe there could have been another outside factor that would have contributed later on to him going back to, you know, robbing. You know, who knows? We'll never know,
right.
I guess.
Well, a desire for a better lifestyle or, a frustration with the inability to kind of achieve the American dream, so to speak, without education and without other resources. So it's hard to say because his family was still poor.
Yeah.
I think he helps, I think he was helping support his family and probably some of his neighbors.
Oh, yeah, that's maybe right.
Maybe even some of the police.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much, Karen, for letting us pick your brain about that. And thank you for writing this wonderful book. We're huge fans.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you.
We're plugging all of your books.
Yeah. We got Prohibition. We know there's one on that.
Oh, well, here's a question for you since you wrote about both topics. Do you think Prohibition had anything to do? What would you say is the connection between Prohibition and the Bonnie and Clyde murders?
So Prohibition was a time of both of them contributed to distrust in government. Right. So this happens during the Depression and people are angry at banks and they're angry at government because things are bad. But they also can't drink. And they're angry about that, too. I mean, that was really, people who were arrested weren't the wealthy. The people who were arrested were the poor guys who really couldn't afford the good stuff, who were buying bootleg liquor or running bootleg liquor. Those are the ones who were filling the jails during Prohibition. So I think they did combine to make people angrier. And I think that's part of how Clyde got away with a lot of stuff for a long time, because people tended to side with him.
Oh.
Yeah, because people didn't trust the government.
People didn't, okay. This
right.
is...
They didn't trust the police. The police might arrest them for, moonshine, for heaven's sake. They didn't trust government. They didn't trust banks. So all these things that represented the establishment were not trusting.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Karen. And it's been... you've kind of like opened up a whole can of worms here.
A new kind of history, right?
Yeah.
I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm so glad she called because I feel like she said three things like that I feel like now I want to blame. First of all, distrust, the distrust for government.
The distrust of government. Yeah.
Of government, yeah.
Also, she said something about how Prohibition had crowded the jails.
Right.
Which
yeah.
seems to really so connect that, to that, our prison system.
That's right. And it kind of like backs up the Prohibition up on the board.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to put up. Well, two other things. American, the desire, this idea of American dream, it keeps popping up like in a few other of our tragedies.
Yeah.
It's this concept that like you need to, that you can do it, right? Not only is it desirable, right? But since you are here, you can now do it. And if you don't, then you're a disappointment.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's an expectation that you need to provide, right? And that like, in some way, if you follow the rules, you'll get ahead. But that's obviously for most people.
Yeah.
Doesn't work out.
Doesn't work
out. And then you turn, then you have distrust for the system and you turn perhaps to a life of crime.
Yeah. It's not that far-fetched. And then the last thing I want to put up there is terrible policing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just the fact that your mom thinks that it's possible that they were being paid off.
Yeah.
Like, that is pretty bad.
I mean, the whole concept of, like, a record is obviously a huge issue today with our prison system. And a huge reason for recidivism. Is that the right word?
I don't know. What is that?
That's when, you go to jail, you get out, and you're, like, still pretty likely to go back to jail.
Oh, yeah.
Because of all of these reasons, because it's hard to get a job. It's hard to support yourself,
Yeah.
Well, shout out to Homeboy Bakeries, which
that's
is such
right.
a cool,
that's
a cool
local,
business.
Yeah. Local business that employs ex-cons.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they make really good tortilla chips.
Oh, yeah. And breads.
Great breads. Yeah. Great breads.
I'm just going to throw this out there really quickly.
Yeah.
what about just Bonnie and Clyde themselves and who they were as people?
Yeah.
100% important. Yeah. Bonnie, and do we want to put them separately or do we want to put them as a pair? Because would they exist separately?
I think Clyde would still do crime.
Would still do crime.
Without Bonnie.
So let's put them up separately.
But yeah, I don't know if Bonnie would still do crime without Clyde.
But it seems the person, her first husband was a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Clyde was a criminal.
Yes.
It seems like she would have, it's a cycle with her. That's that she would have found crime. It's not that she would have, it's that she enjoyed being around it.
Yeah.
And maybe she fed it and fed on it.
Yeah. I mean, if she had so much power over Clyde, she could have, you know, encouraged him to stop, right?
Yeah. And I mean, society obviously had a part to play, but I think the most obvious thing to blame is them and their actions.
Let's put them together then.
Yeah.
Because while I do agree that Clyde would have still done crime, maybe it wouldn't have been as bad.
Yeah.
If they weren't together.
Well, and if there hadn't been the fame aspect of them as like a sexy couple. Yeah.
And it should be said that they were an actual couple.
Yeah.
They were very much in love, although I did read in the book that he did hit her. Like, he wasn't...
Yeah, I don't think it was like a great time.
No.
Our love stories were like pretty dark.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if they included that in the Warren Beatty. Maybe.
It seems like as that they fed off of each other. That if it wasn't... Because he did kill someone before he met her, correct?
He had already met her.
Okay, every time he killed.
Because the first time he killed someone was in jail.
So he hadn't met her.
He had met her because if you recall, she helped get him out of jail first, like that first week.
Got it.
But then he went back to jail and probably got like a harsher sentence.
Yeah, it was like... You know, would the Beatles have been the Beatles if all four of those guys hadn't met each other?
Yeah.
Good. I mean.
Hard to say.
No.
No, they wouldn't.
No.
I'm
pretty sure no. Because.
I don't think they would have.
Because the guy who got replaced by Ringo, it's not like he started a band and had it hot. Pete Best did not have the best luck.
No, he didn't. No.
Right?
Right.
So I think that proves that theory. So, okay. I think it's starting. We start crossing things off the list.
Okay. Yeah, we've got a pretty full board here.
Okay. And Jen, since you have a better view of the board, can you tell us who's on the board?
We have Bonnie and Clyde themselves.
Yes.
Personal responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Texas prison system. The Great Depression. Clyde's brother Buck. Prohibition (parentheses sexy gangsters). Desire for fame. Bonnie's daddy issues, distrust of government, and terrible policing.
Wow. How are we going to cross one thing off?
I mean, it's hard because everything intersects with each other.
Yes.
You know, everything is very like the Great Depression, Prohibition. It's all like very much tied, distrust of government, very tied together.
And even like the easiest one for me, right, would probably be taking Buck off the list.
Sure.
But I mean, they were together when he first did, you know, got caught.
Here's my argument about taking Buck off.
Okay.
Tell me what you think. I think that the more thematic issues on the board besides Bonnie and Clyde are all true for Buck too. You know, like the prison system. He was in prison too. Like, the distress of government, like the Great Depression, he also grew up in poverty under that bridge.
That's true.
You know? And so any...
Under the wagon, too.
Under the wagon.
Gosh.
They were the exception. I mean, they were the exception, not the rule, Bonnie and Clyde. Like, they were... many people lived the way they did, in the time they did, under the laws that they did. And they didn't do what Bonnie and Clyde did.
That's true also.
I mean, that's a really good point.
Thank you.
Okay, so I buy that. Let's take Buck off the list.
I think we can take Buck off.
Just
I think
to
we could
start.
Probably take Bonnie's daddy issues because I think maybe that gave her a little more skip in her step, but I don't know that it really caused the murders.
Right. It maybe caused her to get married at a young age.
Yeah.
And she was a very intelligent person at she was a very good writer. What, that was one of the main takeaways from the book. Mm-hmm. Was that, what could, she was a very good writer, a poet, I guess.
Yeah.
So she could have really done something with her life. But again, there are a lot of people with daddy issues out there.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So I think it's safe to I feel good about
it. It might have caused her to be into Clyde.
Yeah.
But not necessarily for them to kill.
Into crime.
Into crime, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
She could have just like had a crime podcast.
That would have been, you know? I mean, she lost an opportunity. Or written a crime novel, like a sexy crime novel.
I wish you could do a crime podcast on Erios. That would be, people would listen to that.
Call her up.
I know.
People would like that.
So now we've got Bonnie and Clyde, Texas prison system, Great Depression, Prohibition, desire for fame, distrust of government, terrible policing. I mean, it goes on and on and on.
I think terrible policing and distrust of government are the same thing.
Okay, so maybe we combine them.
So maybe I'll take away terrible policing and just know that it's because of, it's everything in the government. It's the way they conducted themselves.
Okay, I like that. So we're taking off terrible policing because it's actually going into distrust of government.
I think we can take off. I do think it was a huge factor, and No, I brought it up, but I think desire for fame, it really contributed to it, but I don't think it was the cause of everything.
Okay.
Because again, a lot of people desire fame, you know.
Yeah.
I think it was a more of a side factor.
Right. I think it was a side, and I think it was a strong side factor, but I don't think he went into it for the fame. I think he went into it because he needed the money.
Right. And he distrusted the government.
Yeah.
So then is it fair to say that the prohibition kind of, you know, that glorifying of the sexy gangster, we'd take that off too because he wasn't going in it for that either?
Although prohibition really caused the, according to Karen Blumenthal, prohibition really caused the distrust for government.
Yeah.
So it's almost like prohibition is more or the distrust of government because of prohibition.
Right.
So
And the prison system.
And the prison system. Prohibition caused overcrowding in the prison system.
And his experience in the prison system caused his distrust of government.
Right. So it's like that's like a circle.
I think the Texas prison system is underlying prohibition, distrust of government to me, because it's like for him personally, like a lot of people, as you were saying, Rhea, grew up in the Great Depression, didn't go on a murder spree, but a lot of people weren't in the horrible prison system,
right?
And it does seem like a lot of people who were then murdering.
Okay.
There
so
seems to be like a pretty strong link there.
I feel good about the amount of time that the Great Depression and Prohibition have been up on the board, and I think we're ready to take them off the list.
Yeah, I think we know in our hearts that they contributed.
Yes, and I think we've made that very clear.
Yeah.
So we're giving both of those a slap on the wrist.
Yes.
Community service. Now, we've got Bonnie and Clyde, Texas prison system, and distrust of government left.
Oh, this is hard.
The Texas prison system gave him personally the distrust of government.
Yeah.
So we can cross off distrust of government.
Yeah. Because there was a greater distrust of government, but it wasn't necessarily what made him murder.
Right. It was personal to him. System. It was very personal to him. I wish Karen was on the horn, but there was a change in
on the horn. It's very 30s, really like in the mood.
There was a change in I think it's the person who runs the prison systems in 33, and it was 33, yeah, and they were like dead set on getting Bonnie, and in all fairness, he didn't want, he felt like he could kill. The only times he killed was when he felt pushback from cops, because he felt like he could have been caught, and he vowed to never go back to prison. And that's why he actually killed, because otherwise he took for hostage a lot of cops as well. He took them and eventually let them go, and he didn't kill them. It was just like this fear. It's like it's almost like it's his fear of going back to prison was really what caused him to kill.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that a new thing we're putting on the board?
It's a new thing, yeah, that I feel very strongly about. Wow.
I feel like it's encapsulated for me in the prison system. It was so bad that he wouldn't go back. But it is also, again, the prison system is part of the government.
Right.
You know?
His fear, what caused these murder sprees, right, was his fear of getting caught and going back to prison.
Why did he even do all that stuff? Because the simple way to not go back to prison is to not go on crime sprees.
Well, he couldn't get a job, right?
And they kept supporting, you know, they kept picking him up at his job. And that's why he got fired, because the police would show up to take him away for like a few days. And it's like, it's the Great Depression. So many people need jobs. Who wants to employ someone who's a liability and doesn't show up?
Yeah.
I in my mind, I'm kind of settled.
Okay.
And I want to know what you think. I think that who's to blame
should we say it on three?
One, two, three. Prison. Texas prison system.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. I messed that up.
Okay.
Should we do it again?
Ready? One, two, three.
Texas prison system.
Okay, wow. It's settled. It's settled. Texas prison system, you are going to the alarmist jail. What a turn this took.
Really, you know, we went on a journey. Ooh. We came right back to our first instinct.
We did. And but that makes me feel good about, look, Bonnie and Clyde, definitely, they did the killing. We all know that. But as you all know, listeners, we don't always blame who actually did it.
Blame what motivated. The motivation.
Exactly.
You know?
So I feel good about that.
Yeah, I do too.
Well, thank you so much for being on our show, Jen.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Jennifer Pam, I'm sure, you know, you're going to be a fan favorite. And so is Karen.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Thank you to my mom, Karen.
What is your mom's books called, so they could go pick it up?
So this book is called Bonnie and Clyde, The Making of a Legend. But you can look her up. Her name's Karen Blumenthal. She's written about Steve Jobs and Hillary Clinton and Prohibition.
Bootleg.
She has a new book coming out in the spring about Roe v. Wade.
Amazing.
Very exciting.
I can't wait to read it. I'm gonna read all of her books now. KarenBlumenthal.com.
Yeah.
That's a good way of, you know, stay in touch. After the killing spree of Bonnie and Clyde, in the last stanza of The Story of Bonnie and Clyde, Bonnie writes, "Someday they'll go down together. They'll bury them side by side. To few, it'll be grief. To the law, a relief. But it's death for Bonnie and Clyde." But in fact, Bonnie and Clyde were buried separately. Although linked in life, Bonnie and Clyde were split in death. While the pair wished to be buried side by side, Bonnie's mother, who had disapproved of her relationship with Clyde, had her daughter buried in a separate Dallas cemetery. Clyde was buried next to his brother Buck, underneath a gravestone with his hand-picked epitaph, "Gone but not forgotten." In the end, Bonnie and Clyde died as they lived, in a hail of bullets. Their murderous days were over, but their legend, often rooted more in fiction than in fact, would only grow in years to come. There have been many songs, movies, and TV shows about the pair, and our guess is there will be more. Vote for who you think is to blame by going on thealarmistpodcast.com and write in and let us know all of your thoughts at thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Instagram @thealarmistpodcast and Twitter @alarmistthe. Tune in next week as we'll be talking about the Preppy murder. Thank you so much.
Earios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.